afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for April 1st, 2015. I'm Alexa Liacco. For months, the state has been urging California residents to cut down on water use to address the ongoing drought. And today, Governor Jerry Brown was in the Sierra Nevada mountains to take decisive action. Chen Li has details on his historic action.
California Governor Jerry Brown imposed the first mandatory water restrictions today, ordering residents and businesses to reduce water usage by 25%. The restriction was enacted due to the low snowpack record, which Brown announced standing on dry glass in the Sierra Nevada mountains. The fields should be covered by 5 feet of snow. Snowpack has always been a major source of water for the state, but has depleted as a result of the drought recently. The reduction in water is expected to save roughly 1.5 million acre feet of water over the next 9 months. Brown also ordered the replacement of 50 million square feet of lawns with drought-tolerant landscaping and the replacement of old appliances with more water-efficient models.
That was Chen Li reporting. A recent hit-and-run near USC has the police searching for answers. Sarah Tiano has the story.
The LA City Council approved a $50,000 reward this morning in an effort to find a hit-and-run suspect near USC. The driver fatally struck 58-year-old Elias Aceves at 9 p.m. on March 10th at the crosswalk at 23rd Street and Portland Avenue. Aceves died shortly after at a local hospital. Andy Aceves, brother of the victim, hoped the reward would help shed light on the incident.
We want the reward to be an incentive for somebody that knows or heard something, so that way that could be an incentive for them to report this individual that might have knowledge and capture my brother's killer and just help us. I mean, we need every lead that can be done. So if they could be enticed by the $50,000 reward, great. That's what we need. We need leads.
Accidents like these have become all too common in LA. According to a recent LAPD report, there have been 400 more hit and runs in 2015 compared to this time last year. Captain David Kowalski talked about how the LAPD is looking to target this issue.
We've tried to reduce these since we've seen this increase by increasing our police presence, considering both citations and warnings to motorists and pedestrians, as well as using social media.
The police department is also working with USC to warn students about walking at night. Sarah Tiano, Annenberg Radio News.
Court documents show Andrew Getty suffered from a serious blood pressure disorder. The heir to the Getty oil fortune was found dead in his Hollywood Hills home yesterday. Getty's condition was documented in a restraining order filed 2 weeks ago against a former girlfriend. Police say they found the 47-year-old Getty lying on his side in a hallway surrounded by blood. The coroner's office says his death appears to have been an accident or the result of natural causes. Toxicology results are expected to take up to 6 weeks. It may take longer than usual for your trash bins to be collected today. Casey Tamkin tells us why.
60% of Los Angeles' sanitation workers called in sick this morning, signaling displeasure with ongoing contract negotiations. The Service Employees International Union, which did not condone the protests, is in the middle of a tough labor dispute with the city management. Points of contention include city demands that workers forego raises for 3 years and contribute more towards their health care premiums. LA Coalition employees, who make up more than half of the city's civilian workforce, have been without a contract since last summer. The union represents about 800 sanitation workers who are responsible for collecting solid waste and maintaining the city's network of sewers. It's unclear how long the work stoppage will last, but city officials say trash pickup will continue as scheduled. Casey Tamkin, Annenberg Radio News.
The Los Angeles City Council voted today to set aside millions of dollars for sidewalk repair projects. Giovanni Mujias reports.
Council members agreed to spend $31 million each year for 30 years to fix damaged sidewalks. The council took action in an effort to settle lawsuits by disabled residents. Three advocacy groups sued LA more than 4 years ago. They claimed that the city's failure to fix sidewalks is a violation of the American Disabilities Act, because it reduced their access to public walkways. With the legal cases unresolved, city officials were unable to move forward with a long-term repair plan until now. Details of how the money will be used and who will be responsible for overseeing repairs are still being hammered out. The last time LA tried to tackle this issue 45 years ago, the project ended abruptly due to a lack of funding. Giovanni Mujias, Annenberg, Radio News. Huge news out of Inglewood today. Ladies and gentlemen, football is coming back to the City of Angels. The St. Louis Rams and the San Diego Chargers announced today they are coming to L.A. in 2016 and will share Stan Kroenke Stadium in Inglewood. Kroenke said today the Oakland Raiders were never in the running for the stadium. Psych! April Fools, everybody! In real sports news today, the Lakers waived point guard Steve Nash in order to sign guard Jabari Brown to a multi-year contract. His second 10-day contract expired following the Lakers' win in Philadelphia on Monday. The Purple and Gold are in action tonight, hosting Anthony Davis and the New Orleans Pelicans. Meanwhile, the neighboring Clippers look to shake off last night's loss to the Warriors when they take on the Blazers tonight in Portland in what could be a playoff preview. Rip City is currently fourth in the West, with the Clips fifth. Now to the Diamond, where the Dodgers and Angels are finishing up their spring training campaigns. The Boys in Blue are taking on the Royals, and the Halos face division rivals Oakland. And finally, former USC football player Armand Armstead reached a settlement with the school today following a lawsuit from 2012. Armstead filed the lawsuit alleging that the team doctor gave him painkillers that eventually led to a heart attack. This has been the Sports Minute. Max Holm, Annenberg Radio News.
A new study shows that free apps aren't so free after all. Executive producer Sean Birch has the details.
A joint research project between USC and Queen's University in Canada found that apps with advertisements use 16% more energy on average, lowering battery life by about 2 hours. And since apps take up data space, they're also costing users money. Free apps with ads use nearly 80% more network data, costing an estimated 1.7 cents every time they're used. Dr. William Halfand, an author of the study and USC professor, talked about its impact on both users and content providers.
We found that developers of apps were getting hurt as well by these things. So it was impacting their rankings, impacting their stars and their reviews. But we see a motivation for both sides to change their behavior in some way.
Dr. Halfand will be presenting their findings at the International Conference of Software Engineering in Italy next month. Sean Birch, Annenberg Radio News.
S&P 500, NASDAQ, and Dow Jones all finishing in the red. Investors were concerned over a tepid jobs report, which showed that U.S. private employers added their least amount of jobs in more than a year this past month. McDonald's was the biggest story of the day, announcing that they would increase wages by at least $1 for minimum wage employees. The move will impact 90,000 workers. Shareholders weren't immediately bullish, though, with the company falling 1 point on the session. If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Faith Miller with today's Root Source.
It's easy to be gullible on April 1st, but how exactly did this holiday come to be? In ancient cultures, the New Year was celebrated on April 1st. When the holiday was changed in 1582 by Pope Gregory XIII to January 1st, some didn't get the memo and continued to celebrate in April. Those who did were called April Fools. The day has also been linked to the vernal equinox and the start of spring. People brush off the doom and gloom of winter months and embrace making fun of each other more with the sun out. Another historical moment dates back to the Romans, who on April 1st celebrated their festival of Hilaria. Man, the Romans had everything. With all that in mind, it's not just friends and family playing innocent tricks and pranks come the first of the month. Some major pranks over the years have ranged from the announcing of the end of the world the following day to spaghetti trees and the left-handed whopper. April Fool's Day is a time to not take yourself as seriously, get ready for summer's warm months, and to get one over on your buddies. Stay gullible, America. Truth is, nothing definitively can explain how we came about this hilarious day, but pranksters and jokesters will continue scheming and celebrating for the foreseeable future.
Roger Steffens has worked on stage, in film, and in radio, but he's made history for his reggae archives. He showed Vanessa Okothobo around the 7 rooms in his home that make up the world's largest Bob Marley collection.
Well, we'll begin the tour in the reggae reception chamber, and in here there are 2,000 hours of reggae video. There are 3,000 reggae
business. How did you come to learn about reggae and to fall so in love with it?
I read an article in Rolling Stone in 73 that an Australian gonzo journalist wrote, and he said, reggae music crawls into your bloodstream like some vampire amoeba from the psychic rapids of Upper Niger consciousness. I have never heard anything like that before. I got to find it. And I went out immediately and got a copy of Catch a Fire, the Zippo lighter version.
Do you think it, you know, was a coincidence that the first reggae record that you bought was Bob Marley, or, you know, was it on a recommendation, or?
Well, it was a coincidence. I found a used copy for $2.25. I could take a chance. Didn't take it off the turntable for 3 weeks. These cabinets are my reggae correspondence file with people all over the world involved in reggae music.
And you had a chance to meet him. Do you remember your first encounter and what that was like?
Yeah, it was in 78, rather, and Bob was coming to Santa Cruz to do 2 shows, so we got tickets, my wife and I, for both of them. And there was a tall, skinny fellow with little nubber dreadlocks standing by the soundboard when we went in, and I figured he had something to do with the band, and I said, "Pardon me, sir, are you going to do Waiting in Vain tonight?" And he said, "Why?" I said, "Whoa, that's my favorite Marley song, especially that incredible lead guitar that Junior Marvin plays." And he said, "You want to meet Bob?" "Yeah." "Really? Yeah. Can I bring my wife?" He said, "Sure." You know, just like that. So he takes me down this long hall to go backstage. He says, "What's your name?" I said, "I'm Roger. This is my wife, Mary." He says, "Hi, I'm Junior Marvin." So I said the right thing to the right guy at the right time, and we went backstage and met the whole band. I had a poster for a show 3 nights later that they were giving out in line. Junior said, "Well, why don't you ask Bob to sign it?" And I go,
"Oh, sure, this guy."
Oh, I was speechless. You know, I just was so overwhelmed. Bob was so out of it that I couldn't really engage him in conversation. I asked him if he'd do Waiting in Vain, and he just kind of went, "Yeah, maybe."
You know, we... been through this, you know, your archives, and they take up 7 rooms, which is just impressive to say the least.
Or crazy.
Yeah. And how did you start collecting? I mean, what inspired you to document everything in this way?
Well, I've always been a public speaker my whole life. I've been a performer since I was 5. When a subject interests me, I always kept a file. So I took that Rolling Stone article and I put it in a manila envelope, and that was the birth of Roger Steffens Reggae Archives. I couldn't believe that this hugely varied and super exciting musical form existed 200 miles off our shore, and we'd never heard about
it. This is the Bob Marley cabinet, and this is the most valuable part of the collection, the board tapes of the One Love Peace Concert.
And do you have an estimate as to how many items you have here?
Yeah, it can only be an estimate. It's over 300,000 items. Now it's 7 rooms, floor to ceiling. We've had to move twice to house the collection. And the garage. You can't fit a Kleenex in the garage. It's packed right to the door.
One of the things that comes with having an archive this big is, you know, you have to think about, you know, what will happen to it, you know, down the line.
Yeah, I'm 72. My kids don't want to be burdened with it. And I want to make sure that it belongs to history. There's too much important one-of-a-kind stuff in here. The Jamaica's archive was looted to the ground over the years. There's nothing left there. And they've looked to me to kind of, you know, help them out of that dilemma. But, you know, until they promise to keep it intact and make it available to the public while observing all the rights of the artists, I'm not letting it out of the house. And then his accomplishments, because what he did was something for the ages. Just an extraordinary life story.
That's a 10 million diamond award for legend. And that was given to me by his publicist.
That interview was produced by Vanessa Okothobo and Victor Figueroa. That's it for this Wednesday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Alexa Liacco.